Thanks for joining. It's wonderful to see you all. Can you please just raise your hand like that if you can hear me okay? Great. Yay. Excellent. So let's begin with a little bit of practice together, a little meditation. As you may know, spirituality is a bit of a paradox. And doing spiritual practice, you have to kind of be approaching it in a paradoxical way. Because on one hand, we do it for a particular purpose. We do it because we're going to get something out of it. Otherwise, why would we do it if it wasn't having a positive effect? And at the same time, if you're approaching it psychologically from the point of view of wanting to get something out of it, then that psychological orientation toward it itself blocks the positive effect, or can block it to a certain degree, depending on how strongly you're holding that type of orientation. So it's very helpful. Just greetings, folks. It's very helpful right at the beginning of doing any kind of practice to deliberately orient yourself in a different way. We have this capacity to desire and to want, to have a goal, to aim, and so on. And we also have the capacity to feel that we are offering something, you know, that we're giving some kind of gift. And in orienting ourselves towards giving rather than trying to get, then we are putting ourselves internally in the position to spontaneously open to the very positive effects that we're after, because that positive effect is really to connect with something that's already there. It's to connect with a capacity that's already within you, not to achieve and to get, but to uncover and to unfold. So that's why this IJM practice, which I think all of you are familiar with, begins with just deliberately offering yourself. So I want to invite you to touch your heart and just taking a moment to find that attitude within yourself of giving something. In this moment, what we're giving is attention, giving our awareness fully to this moment. And knowing that in any situation we're in, where we're called upon to give various things, still at the root of it is giving of attention, giving of our presence, our awareness, our connectedness with this moment and with whatever is happening in this moment. So just touching your heart and bringing that kavanah to mind to offer yourself, offer your awareness to this moment. And the chanting word for that, lecha. Lecha. And in giving of yourself to this moment, the closest thing to you are your senses, your body, your breathing. And so bringing your hand down to your belly, just connecting viscerally with the center of your body. And allowing your awareness to expand outward down into your hips and flowing down into your legs. Into your feet and toes, and shining upward from your belly into your chest, into your shoulders, down your arms and hands, and shining upwards into your face, saturating your body with awareness. And letting your awareness rest in the flow of your breathing. So that your body receives this offering of awareness, of attention, feeling it as love and life energy in your body. And knowing that every movement that we make and every movement that happens in the world around us the constant transforming and expression that this moment brings is all the unfolding of one reality. It's all the expression of the one being. And so we're all doing that together, regardless of whether we're aware of it or not. Regardless of our intention or not, the universe is doing this one activity of expressing reality, of expressing being. And so the word na'aseh, we will do, knowing that all happening is the expression of the one, chanting na'aseh. Na'aseh. And bringing your hand to your forehead, touching your forehead, enlivening this third part of your body, and becoming aware of this constant space of awareness within which your body is happening, within which your breathing's happening, within which every emotional energy rises and falls, within which every thought rises and fades. And that you are this space of awareness, feeling yourself sink into that space, noticing all that happens in your field of awareness. Chanting Vinishma, you will hear. Vinishma. And you can kiss your fingers, relax your hand. And just feeling those three centers of your body alive. Just being with that space of awareness, the giving of yourself to this moment, and your awareness dwelling with your body. Let's chant for about a minute. Atahu. Atahu. Bringing your mind as you chant Atahu just to the understanding that Atahu includes everything. It's all inclusive. It's your awareness, and it's everything you're aware of, and it's all it is. And we'll chant for a few moments Atahu, and then we'll go into silent meditation, and you can continue to use Atahu just in your mind if you like. You can also let go of it and just dwell in the silence. That's fine too. And we'll sit for about 5 minutes in silence after we stop chanting Atahu. And you'll hear a little bell. Atahu, 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 Atahu. Atahu, 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 Atahu. And sitting for about 5 minutes. Thank you. And once again, bringing your hand to your heart to orient towards these three pillars, offering yourself to this moment. Lecha. Lecha. Bringing your hand to your belly, grounding your awareness in your body. Na'ase. Na'ase. Bring your hand to your forehead, Vinishma, we will hear. Vinishma. Amen, Atahu. So, you may notice that in general, in life, there's a few different arenas within which you can practice. One arena is practicing by yourself. So if you have a daily practice, you get up in the morning and you go off and you chant the Shema, you meditate, do some learning, whatever it is. So that has its own particular quality to it, right? When you're by yourself, it's a different thing. For some people, this is like the most wonderful thing to just be by yourself and do that. And for other people, it's very challenging. It feels, you get antsy, you feel like you're more comfortable if you're around other people, right? These are the polarities of personality types. Another scenario is when you are basically still by yourself, but you're not doing spiritual practice, you're doing other things. You're doing the dishes, you're walking from one place to another, but that's still a place to practice. You can constantly practice presence in whatever you're doing, and the more you bring your presence into whatever you're doing, then the more it becomes a spiritual practice, and it can become very transformative, especially in the moments where the world starts throwing things at you that are like knocking you from your presence. In those moments when you can hold the intention and open to whatever the moment is bringing, rather than getting stuck in a particular reactivity to it, those are very transformative moments. Those are like your push-ups and your sit-ups of spirituality. Then there are times, this is a third kind of scenario, where it's like the second time, but you're having to deal socially with other people. Perhaps you have people you're taking care of, or you have friends that you're just relating with, or you have strangers that are giving you the finger as they drive by. That happened to me this morning as I thought I was being polite, letting someone come in front of me. I guess he thought I wasn't doing it fast enough. And so he gave me the finger, and my son was there. And my son looked very curious. He said, I wonder what he was eating. And I said, I think it was McDonald's. And I actually drove up alongside him and waved. And Adan said, Starbucks. Anyway, so we deal with people. We're dealing with people. And those people are not necessarily doing their spiritual practice. And even if they were, that doesn't mean they were being successful at it. And so that's the whole world of social reality. Again, it's the same exact practice, being present, watching yourself, and keeping connected to access your highest wisdom and intelligence and capacity for the midot. So that was number three. And the fourth and last one is this. The fourth and last one is when you get together with other people that are also coming deliberately. The only reason you're here is to be on a spiritual path. So that has a particularly nice quality to it, because that's what spiritual community is. You have fellowship, you connect with others, and you can share. And so I see that as the real gift of being able to do something like this on the internet. And it doesn't really matter where we are. A lot of you are in the Bay Area, but not all of you. Some of you, Wendy's there in the South Bay, and Aaron's there way over in Ohio, right? Ohio. So, and then there's a few folks I see in 415 that are on the phone. So I'm not sure who you are. There's three folks. I can't see who you are. And what I'd like to do is unmute those folks that I can't see, just so you can say something and introduce yourself, because the rest of us can see each other. And that way, if you want to participate, then we'll know who you are and that you want to participate. So I'm going to unmute the final number of 5498, okay? Hello? Are you there?
Hi, mine is Pearl.
Hi. Say again who you are.
This is Pearl.
Hi. Good to hear you. Good to hear you.
Hi. So I'm going to mute myself again because I don't want you to hear any background noises.
Okay, no problem.
Because I'm on speakerphone.
No problem. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Hello?
This is Liz in San Francisco.
Oh, hi, Liz. Great to have you here. Okay, thanks for chiming in. Okay, I'll mute you again. And there's an iPad here too, huh? Hello? iPad? Maybe not right now. Okay. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to open it up. Someone's muted. Let's see here. There we go. Okay. I'd like to open it up and ways that you can enter the conversation. One way could be that there's something that you want to share, a certain experience, a testimonial, if you will, or something that you are, an experience that brought up a question for you. That would be a good thing to enter with. And I see Wendy's there, so I'm just going to let Wendy jump right in here.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I'm actually calling her on the phone from Half Moon Bay, right by the ocean.
Nice.
So I've got a practice question that's come up quite a bit, and it was your Netilat Yadayim that brought that up for me. And and I get into this all the time with Aryeh about traditionally when you're saying a blessing and you're doing an act, you know, even could be lighting Shabbos candles, that you're supposed to do the act and then do the blessing. And it feels better for me to do the blessing while I'm doing the act, like when I'm washing my hands, to say the blessing while I'm washing my hands. And I'm just wondering about that and, you know, in terms of the presence and, you know, how does one resolve that?
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, there's sort of a few different levels to the question, you know, because on one hand, if, as most folks probably know, in Judaism, whether you're doing something the way you're supposed to or not, you know, is a legal question. And there is the idea, the ideology in traditional Judaism or Orthodox Judaism, that there is an authoritative halakha, meaning a law that's been, and there's a process by which those laws are made. And if you subscribe to that, then that becomes part of a very important part of your spiritual practice. In other words, there's a general practice of surrender, which has to do with softening, opening, making transparent of the ego. That means the sort of tendency to have a contracted and separate sense of self. And a huge part of being present and practicing in the flow of life and in prayer and in all the different practices has to do with allowing that contraction to relax. That's surrender. And in Orthodox Judaism, part of that surrender is affected by the belief that you're supposed to do these things. And so even when you don't want to do them, you do them anyway. And that's part of how you surrender. It's, in my view, that's not an essential piece of spiritual practice. And I say that because as a kind of a universalist and seeing people in all different traditions and people that are not in any tradition, what I see is that the core piece of it is the surrender piece, not the particular subscribing to the belief that you have to do certain things. However, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a valid spiritual path. And for some people, that seems to be necessary. So I just want to, first of all, kind of give the broader context that if you're approaching questions like this of Jewish ritual from a halachic point of view, then that becomes part of your spiritual practice if you're accepting the authority of that in general. Now, you may not know whether you do or not. That may not be a very definite kind of reality for you one way or the other. It might be a question. Do I accept that authority? Do I not? And that's okay too. So that's one level of it. Another level of it is just kind of an intellectual question. It's not really a spiritual practice question. It's just kind of, you want to know in the tradition, not because I accept it as my authority, but I'm just interested to know, is it halakhically true that you're supposed to wait to the end of the hand washing to say the blessing from a halakhic point of view or not? That's a great question. I actually have no idea the answer to that. I have to look that up, but that's easy to look up. So we can look that up. I see you're saying, okay, one moment, let me finish this little round and then we'll get to you, Gloria. So that's from an intellectual point of view. One thing I will say about that, just from the kind of intellectual point of view and knowing about the tradition, is that it's true. Most blessings, you say the bracha and then you do the act. And there's a few exceptions to that, right? One of them is lighting Shabbat candles, because it's considered Shabbat already once you say the bracha for lighting Shabbat candles. So if it's Shabbat, you can't light the candles anymore. because there's no, halakhically, you don't light fire. So you light the fire first, and then you cover your eyes to give an effect like you're not really receiving the light yet. And then you say the blessing, and then you uncover, open your eyes as if the candles are then being lit. And that's it. Then you say, then you can say the blessing, right? Now, in the case of Netilat Yadayim, it's interesting. Not only is Netilat Yadayim said after, but very often, you know, in some practices, the blessing for Netilat Yadayim in the morning is said way after you do it, like as part of the morning blessing. So, for example, a person who goes to shul every day will do Netilat Yadayim when they wake up, and then may go to shul, and the whole traveling to the shul and in between. And then once you get there, you're saying the morning blessings, and among the morning blessings is Netilat Yadayim. So there's a few reasons for that that I can think of offhand, and I think it's this would be good to learn more about. But one reason is that sometimes you do Netilat Yadayim in the bathroom. So it's halakhically forbidden to say brachot or say words of Torah in the bathroom. Okay, so that's another reason why you wait till you come out of the bathroom to say the blessing. Another reason is that for morning blessings in general, for people who go to shul, it's considered beneficial for someone to say amen to your blessings. So there's a practice in some communities where people will actually turn to each other and say the morning blessings, and like a chevruta, some of them will say amen. Certainly the chazan, when there's, or whoever the, you know, the prayer leader is, will go through those. So now this is just my personal view, you know. I don't see any reason why you can't say the bracha while you're doing it, if that is meaningful and powerful to you. And just understanding what the tradition is, and being able to kind of give respect to the bracha, you know, it's an expression of respect to step back from the kind of bathroom reality before you do the traditional Hebrew prayers.
It's like, you know, I'm a retired nurse practitioner, and I used to say that you let me die while I was washing my hands in between patients.
Yeah.
Water coming on me.
Yeah.
I was more present with the prayer than saying it afterwards.
Yeah, totally. The other thing about the actual wording of the blessing, Netilat Yadayim, is Netilat doesn't really mean washing. As we know, it means a kind of elevating or taking up, like holding something up. Okay. So my understanding of that is that that's a metaphor. You know, that you're becoming conscious of your actions, and your hands are the organs of action. And so you do the water ritual. It's a very nice way to embody that. But if you don't have water, for example, it's halakhically permissible to just rub your hands on a cloth or something like that to wash them. Of course, in the Jewish renewal circles, people often just raise their hands and that's enough. But I try to encourage people to use water. I know that when we don't consider ourselves halakhically obligated, the tendency is to just drop. And sometimes you drop things that are very powerful and effective. And the use of water, I think, is very primal and powerful. So even though it's a little inconvenient and takes a little time for people to do, it's a powerful ritual. That's why I put it there, because if you have something that you do in the morning, right away, as soon as you get up, there's modeani and then there's the hand washing, then that orients you towards your spiritual work right at the beginning of the day. And that's a very powerful thing to do, to actually have a physical action you do. Part of the genius of Judaism are these physical actions, as opposed to just bringing it to mind and just being quiet and present for a moment. You do that too, but you do it in conjunction with a symbolic action.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And Gloria, did you have your hand up? I'm gonna unmute you. Oh, you got it. Okay.
You kind of answered a lot of it. I, you know, a lot that comes to mind. I always like to do things the right way because I came to Judaism very late and a lot of it's self-taught and I feel like I'm not doing it right and I want to know. And I assume there's a reason, like about Shabbat, we know why we light the candles first and then and other, and the motzi too and the kiddush. But, and then I'm thinking of what is done, even like Berkat HaMazon, you eat first and then you give it. To me, it has to do with giving thanks when you bless.
Yeah.
It's that connection.
Right. And
so a lot of it, I thought when you're in the bathroom, you're actually, there's a blessing for, you know, for relieving yourself, but I didn't know you're not supposed to do it in the bathroom, so I'll remember that. But anyway, it's so, I always, you know, I assume there's a reason why there's the halakha, and so I'm just learning.
Yeah.
I'm not Orthodox, but I'm pretty traditional, and I like to go by the rules, you know, and to me it adds to the consciousness, you know. So. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I was just going to say, because we were talking about why we light the candles first, that you talked about the Shabbat, that we, of course, you know, have to, we can't light them after, you know, but so that's all I, you know, I could go on, but
okay.
I don't know. I'm sorry, but that's, I just wanted to say that.
Good. No, that's great. Excuse me a moment. Thank you for that, Gloria. So this is good. So we can have conversation on different levels, you know, and I hear in the conversation so far, there are different levels happening. You know, there's just the learning level, you know, understanding the tradition more, applying it to your own practice. But then there's also ways in which the practice might be a struggle for you, or ways in which things that happen in life seem particularly challenging or incongruent. How do you bring things together? So this is also the invitation, if you have things that you'd like to share or ask or bring in this kind of realm too. Okay, Gloria. Oops, go ahead, yeah.
This is it. I'm still having difficulty incorporating the practice. And again, I get self-critical. That prevents me. That's the resistance. And then it's just layers and layers of compounding why I'm resisting and why I don't get into. And things interfere, whether it was something personal, like something I've been dealing with, you know, in the home, or outside, the stupid political, which I'm so glad I tuned that out while the Olympics were on, and I think I'm going to do a news fast till forever. But then, you know, different things interfere, but I think I really like this. I really appreciate, I'm a student, and I'd like to learn in a classroom. And this enlivens me, and I'm going to spend the whole day today catching up, and hopefully I can get in. It's just been hard to make, you know, to take the time, make it a habit. I don't know why I'm resisting, because I want so much, but that's the resistance, I guess.
Well, let's work with that a little bit. So can you hone in on a time when that resistance arises, and a time in which it arises that you feel that if it didn't arise, you would have done it, but instead you skipped it because this resistance arose. Can you hone in on a time that was like that recently?
Well, just every day that I should be doing this, I should be cooking, I should be, oh, I'm sorry. Just during the day when, oh, I should be cooking, or I should be cleaning, or I should be doing this before I can take the time. You know, it's just placing priorities. And, you know, it's not right. I don't respect it enough, I think, or whatever, to take the time. Like, But once I get into it, it's great to create that space. I think that's what it's all about, right? To accept that I'm resisting and let it go. The dishes can wait or whatever else is happening, more or less. And so it's just any time that I feel I have to do something.
I'm sorry.
I'm not a doing person necessarily. I'm retired. There's nothing I have to do, well, except take care of, you know. That's why I'm so appreciative. It's taken all my life. I wanted to do this meditation, but when I was working and living in New York or this or that, studying, going for this, but now I have the time and I still don't make the time.
So I want to suggest something. First of all, there's many, many ways that you can approach this, because really we're just learning to work with our own mind. And on one hand, right now you're saying, you're expressing that you want to do it. And yet where does that person go when you come to the moment to do it, right? And there's that kind of cognitive dissonance of like, well, then why don't I do it, right? It's like a question. It's almost confusing, right? So there's some different ways to work with it. Just talking about it like this, it can be very powerful, because you're bringing into consciousness now these different motives, these different ways that you think, and they're kind of looking at each other and saying, wait a minute, how can we get together here? Why are we in conflict, right? One other thing that I'd like to bring just as a little suggestion is to bring in the beginning of the practice that we did today, which is the lacha part, because very often what happens is that a person who's generally a good, responsible kind of person will be oriented towards responsibilities, and it can be very difficult to do something for yourself. And the tendency is to think of doing that spiritual practice as something you want to do for yourself. And like you said, you always wanted to do it before, and now you finally can, but for some reason, a lot of times you don't, right? Why? Because the mind goes to what I have to do. And so what do you mean have to do? That means that you're considering those other things to be responsibilities that are expressions of what you need to give to the world. So what I want to suggest is that you reorient yourself to think of your spiritual practice as a kind of giving, right? That it's true that you've always wanted to do it. So one way you could think of it is that you're giving something to your younger self. It's not for you now that you need to do it to make space for yourself, but your younger self so wanted to do that, that you're giving it as a gift. Or that's, of course, kind of a psychological trick. But to get more real with it, what are we here for anyway? Mm-hmm. What are we doing here on this planet? You know, why has consciousness incarnated into these bodies that are now called what, you know, our different names and have these different lives and different stories? Even just to ask that question, you know, and you don't even need to have some sort of solid intellectual answer that becomes like a belief, but rather just to ask the question, how can I serve the consciousness that has come into this body? How can I allow it to fulfill whatever it wanted to fulfill? And we know that the whole aim of spiritual work is allowing that consciousness to come forth and do what it wants to do. It's not about manipulating yourself or changing yourself into something that you're inventing with your mind, but rather the consciousness that is you, that is incarnating as you, wants something to happen. And through the practice, both the core practice of presence and all of the particular practices, there is a loosening of the bonds of conditioning, a loosening of the sense of Gloria and everything Gloria thinks and believes and was brought up to consider to be true and so on, a relaxing of all that and an allowing of the consciousness that's behind all that to come forth and to do what it needs to do. Now, we can put labels on what that is. We can call it spiritual awakening, we can call it spiritual growth, but really, it's a surrendering to a process that wants to happen through you. And so can you reorient yourself to being at service of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That feels real. Yeah. I keep thinking of water because you've done so much about water and going into the water and the rain coming down and the chiffon getting in the flow, and just I keep thinking about like Nakshon, just jump in the water and go instead of staying on dry land and with all these that hold you down, you know,
right.
Gravity. But if you're in the sea, the gravity, you know, so I'm going there.
Nice. So there's an intuition there, yes, that you already know what it's like. You know, and you've tasted it many times, and you taste it now fairly regularly. But there's something within you that wants to make more of a commitment to it.
Yeah.
Wants to make it more part of your life. And I'll tell you, there are little devices you can use too. Like, for example, simply writing down the things you want to do during the day. And you can include the dishes and all that stuff, but then spiritual practice is on there. So once you have it written, it can have it kind of makes more valid the me that wants to do that, as opposed to it just remaining on the mental level. You actually write it down. You can even write down and say out loud, I commit to doing these things every day. And and some of those things may be spiritual work. Some of them may be very mundane things. But of course, you can also do your spiritual work throughout all of them. But it helps to have that time that's just for the spiritual work. It's like, you know, when you're in a relationship with someone, you might do lots of things with that person, but it's not so great for the relationship if everything that you do with a person has some other point to it. Sometimes you want to just be with a person for its own sake, you know, and that's what prayer is, prayer meditation. It's like having a date with God.
Yeah.
You're still with God when you do all the other things, but you're also doing something else. Sometimes it's nice just to have the date, that dedicated time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. I think it's also the time. I remember when I was a kid, I used to schedule my everything, when you do your homework, when you eat. And I think it's before I get, the earlier in the day possible, it'd have to be after coffee, but before you get to, and because then it just, you know, things.
That's absolutely true.
You have to do it for me. And then I get tired in the evening and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, doing it in the morning. And I always tell people, of course, morning is what, for the reason you just said, it's really the best. And if you didn't do it in the morning, that doesn't mean you can't still do it. So it's like, again, it's everything is paradoxical. You have to kind of look at, like there's this Buddhist image of a crow that has only one eyeball, but the eyeball looks out of either eye. It either looks at you this way or it looks at you this way. And it's the one eye that looks from two different points of view. And we have to, in Judaism, in the Talmud, we have a similar image of two pieces of paper in your two pockets, and they say opposite things. But you have to be the one to pull out the piece of paper that's going to motivate you in the right way. You know, am I in the world was created, or am I just dust and ashes? You know, and they're both true. Whichever way your mind is getting stuck, you have to bring in the other perspective.
One last thing. I do like to, at times during the day, let's say, especially if I'm washing dishes, that's a time for me to connect and make it sacred. It may, you know, whatever. It, for me, sometimes it's just gazing. I have a thing about gazing, and then your mind just empties and you're doing something with your hands.
Yes.
But you can go to that space, you know. You don't have to be sitting with, you know, in any position or anything like that. But washing dishes is a really, and walking. I do a lot of walking meditation by the ocean. That to me is a very sacred time. So
yeah,
I guess I'm doing it, but I just, anyway, thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have a little more time and I'd like to see if anybody else would like to say something. And I also just want to say a couple things, which is that this is only the fourth time that we've done this. I've just started getting this video workshop thing going, and I'm very happy with it. I plan to make this regular. I foresee that it'll eventually kind of come into a regular schedule as opposed to me just posting them and inviting individually every time. But I'm waiting for that to become more apparent what a good schedule would be. So I just want you all to know that that's coming. And also that this is for you. And so you may feel comfortable just jumping in like Wendy and Gloria did, and you may not, you know. And so if you don't, it might be helpful to write down in advance for yourself what you'd like to bring. Or if you're not comfortable with that, to actually write me an email first, and I can address it in the meeting, and I'll know already, you know, what your question or comment or whatever is that you want to bring. So all these are possible. Another thing is that I've kind of shifted the podcast thing that's happening. Some of you might have noticed. I'm still putting up the Pierre Kea votes. Wendy's just came on board, so it's not as, you know, this is new to you. But the Pierre Kea vote podcasts are coming. But I'm also doing now a weekly video podcast that comes to everybody at the same time. And I felt that was really important, that everybody was learning something together as opposed to the Pierre Kea vote, which it comes different for everybody. So that's happening. And that what that means, though, is that if there's something you want to learn about in particular, you know, let me know. You can give special requests for what those videos are about. A piece of Tanya, a piece of Gemara, a piece of Torah, or dealing with life situations, dealing with depression, dealing with worry, dealing with certain kinds of relationship issues, you know, practical things like this. Whatever it is, write them in, and that can become material. So for the next few minutes, does anybody else have something that you'd like to bring to the Marcy, okay. Let's undo here. There we go. Hi, Marcy.
Hi.
Hi.
So you can hear me?
Yeah. Yes?
Okay. So I just would like to know, throughout my day, I want to be reconnecting, you know, with Hashem, reconnecting with presence. And it's easy to get lost in the swirl of the day. And so do you have... any practices to suggest for doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron had to go, so be well, Aaron. So as you know, there's already this traditional practice in Judaism of having mezuzot on the doors, and so every time you go through a doorway, which is a lot used for most people going through doorways, there's that moment that you can connect by physically touching and kissing. My suggestion that's based on that is to do the three pillar practice as often as you can. So the three pillar practice is touching your heart, touching your belly, touching your head. Now, just making physical contact with your body itself can bring you very present very quickly. But then we're also adding in a few other pieces to it, which is orienting yourself towards your awareness as a gift. Not just, I want to become present because I want to connect with Hashem, but I'm giving myself to Hashem. I'm offering Hashem my attention, and then touching your belly and just taking a moment to become present in your body, to feel your breathing. And then with the head, becoming aware that you are actually not bounded, that you are this space of awareness. Even though a lot of the time, for most of us living regular lives, we are very absorbed and contracted into thought patterns and reactions and agendas because we're doing stuff, we're getting stuff done, or we're dealing with things. So consciousness becomes narrow for most of us a lot of the day. So it's a wonderful thing to step back from the place that your consciousness is contracted, allow yourself to notice that actually you're not any of those thoughts. You're not any of those agendas. That what you are is aware of them. You're aware of all those things, and your consciousness is fueling all those things, but you are actually just this space, this borderless space of awareness. So that's the Nishma. And you can do this in like 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. Once you practice it a lot, then your nervous system automatically opens up very quickly because it knows how to offer, become present, sense the space, boom. So you can do that as much as you want. Now, if you're having trouble remembering to do it, then, you know, then there's devices, then there's like gimmicks you can use, right? For example, you could spend some time writing down the different times of the day that you want to do it, and then just repeat it in the morning, like as part of your morning practice. Say, okay, you know, when I get to this place, or when I get into the car, or when I do whatever it is, you say it out loud, and then after a week or so, it'll become habit. Hmm. Another thing that you might do, for some people this would be horrible, but for some people this would work, is just to put those little alarm reminders on the phone. I wouldn't like that because the phone is too much binging, and you know, it's for me, it's much better to just have a plan and remind myself. So I actually do that. For example, there's particular things that I know I need to work on that I wouldn't normally think of if I don't give particular attention to it. If I don't say it out loud to myself in the morning, I'm just going to forget it. So I actually write those down and I say them as part of my morning meditation practice, the things that I'm committed to.
Thank you.
Is that helpful?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank God. So we're coming to the end today. I'd like to take a quick show of hands. I was thinking of making the next meeting at 7:30 Pacific time next Tuesday night. Does that sound like a reasonable time for folks? Okay. So again, I encourage you to write in any opinions and ideas you have about times. I think that for some folks, this kind of late morning thing works great. And for other folks, like an after dinner, but not too late time is good too. So it was so wonderful being with you today and engaging in a spiritual conversation. And I look forward to more and more. Lots of love. All right. Have a wonderful day. Many blessings. Mm-hmm.